Good afternoon, everyone. I am calling to order this meeting of the Committee on Taxes for April 18th, 2024. Quorum is present. The first item on our agenda is approval of the minutes from April 17th, 2024. Vice Chair Norris, do I have a motion?
Chair Gomez, I move adoption of the minutes from the April 17th meeting of the Taxes Committee.
Chair Norris has moved adoption of the minutes. Is there any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, no. Motion carries. The minutes for April 17th, 2024 are adopted. So today we'll be hearing public testimony on our tax bill. We have tried to group the testimony where possible, kind of on specific topics on the bill. We have a lot of testifiers. It's going to be 2 minutes. There will be a timekeeper. When you hear the alarm, please wrap it up. You got another few seconds before I interrupt you. It's not to be rude. I just need to kind of make sure that there's time for everybody to speak. Members also have 43 pages of written testimony and letters in their packets via mail and in their physical folders. So without further ado, we'll get right into it. If you haven't signed up ahead of time, there will be an opportunity after the sort of pre-signed up testifiers for you to come forward and offer some comments if there are any members of the public here who didn't get a chance to sign up in advance. So first up, we're going to hear from the Commissioner of the Department of Revenue, Commissioner Paul Marquardt. Welcome back to the committee.
Well, thank you very much, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Paul Marquardt, Commissioner of the Department of Revenue. And I want to thank Chair Gomez and the Tax Committee and Chair Les Lagarde and the Property Tax Division for putting together a very good bill for Minnesotans. And, you know, I was here earlier, and the top priority in Governor Walz's Lieutenant Governor Flanagan's bill was kids and families. And the number one priority in this tax bill are kids and families. So I'm really excited about that. And one major item that is in both the governor's supplemental budget bill and this one is an item that is extremely crucial and important to the success and enhancement of the child tax credit in reducing child poverty, and that is the 50% minimum credit. Kind of the safe harbor, if you will. And as I've mentioned before in this committee, we want people to get in to the advanced periodic child tax credit, which will start next year. Because one of the big obstacles and kind of one of the big fears of getting people involved in that is kind of that uncertainty of the amount at the end of that credit that you've received on the advancement. So with having the 50% minimum credit, it's extremely important. It enhances the child tax credit. It increases the participation of the advanced child tax credit. And we know if we can do that, it has huge positive impacts on reducing child poverty, but also ultimately on family and benefits for the entire state of Minnesota. So again, thank you so much for sharing the governor's and lieutenant governor's priority on making the state of Minnesota the best state in the nation for kids and families. Other items that were in the governor's supplemental tax bill that are in this bill, the attachments and appurtenances. Now utility cooperatives, it's better defined now what's part of their power distribution system that is exempt from taxes. So I'm glad that is in there. Sets a permanent 0.5% credit rate for the provider tax research credit. And also, thank you for including the Department of Revenue technical and policy bill. Always a headliner every year in an omnibus tax bill. Other items that the department really appreciate is the increased funding on the taxpayer assistant grants and the outreach grants. We know how important outreach is to getting, especially when you're starting a new credit program, into the hands of families and folks around the state. Also, very much appreciate your consideration and recognition of the good work of the Local Sales Tax Advisory Task Force, and that's Article 6 in your bill, and really appreciate the consideration on that. As a note, you know, with this very tight budget into the 26-27 tails, the governor will be monitoring and is concerned about the level of ongoing permanent funding into the tails in the 26-27, and that's in all the budgets, so he certainly will be looking at that. So in close, I just want to say that in the last 2 years, this has really truly been an honor and pleasure to work with this committee and with the staff here at the House. It's just wonderful. And I look forward to continuing to work as we move forward on this bill. And the Department of Revenue, we take very seriously our role and responsibility in being able to implement the priorities and goals of the governor and the legislature. And so whatever we can do to make things better for our taxpayers and for Minnesotans around the state, we're here with you. So again, thank you for putting together a very good bill for Minnesotans. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Marquardt. Up next, Auditor Blaha and Commissioner Moran, you are on deck. Welcome back.
Thank you, Chair Gomez, Lee Davis, Vice Chair Norris. I am your state auditor, Julie Blaha, and I'm going to get right to some ideas that we have. I know you all know this is your favorite part of the bill, looking at the oversight of the sales tax portion. So as we've been looking at that section where we've been named, after further review, we found that approving the ballot question out of our office could jeopardize our independence when it comes to audits. So we've been working with the authors, talking with Revenue, about the idea, about a couple of ideas. Also, as I listen to your discussion, it seems you all want testing more than you want data. So here's my thinking. The Department of Revenue would do that first approval. They would be the ones who would approve if a sales tax initiative would be able to go to the vote without going through the legislature. So they would have that first look. But next, we would look at adding a test of local sales tax to our legal compliance guide. And I know that exactly one person on this group knows exactly what I'm talking about. But this is the guide that says what does an auditor have to check when they do your audit. And so if it's in the legal compliance guide, a check of is that, you know, based on your statute, is that being done properly, that means it is going to be your local auditor that knows you the best and also is going to be the one that checks it. That's both an effective way to do it, again, because it's your auditor who knows your budget, and it's also the most cost-efficient way to do it as well. And then finally, I think we dropped the report that was originally requested because if you're doing the testing for your audit, that will necessitate you keeping the data and having that available without having to actually do anything additional. And that way it would, again, not only be more simple, but it would also drop our fiscal note to zero. So with that, I know we're going to be talking about this. If anybody wants to nerd out or read the legal compliance guide, I brought it with me. Again, I appreciate the work you're working to do here, and we look forward to serving the needs that you have with this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Auditor Blaha. Up next, Commissioner Moran. On deck is Jessica Webster. Welcome, Commissioner Moran.
Yes, good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. What a delight to be back here before you. For the record, my name is Rena Moran, Ramsey County Commissioner, District 4. So you are sitting in my district right now. So I am here in support and appreciation of what you brought forward in your important tax omnibus bill and on a few fronts. I think the changes to the child tax credit are great for families that we want to serve. And I want to focus my comments on the local homeless prevention aid changes. So what we know in Ramsey County, individuals and families from across the state travel to St. Paul to get help and support from Ramsey County. And we never turn anyone away. So this one time, $5 million is much appreciated, and we will use it. Ramsey certification for the local homeless prevention aid is about $2.1 million each of the fiscal year in 23 and in 24. So our estimation of the new money will give us a desperately needed extra $500,000. There is definitely never, ever enough money to make sure that we're doing the work that we need to do for individuals and families and children in Ramsey County. So this A, support the youth-designated warming centers and the development of a youth navigation social worker in our housing stability department. This A supports Catholic Charities at the Family Service Center to help homeless families stabilize in shelters, get kids to school, and connect with school resource specialists, navigate services, and locate housing. We are developing a housing stability-focused school social worker, which is really desperately needed. That is a partnership with St. Paul Public Schools and Project Reach. So just as important, I want to thank you, Madam Chair and members, for making this program permanent with the removal of the sunset. This allows us to do better planning when we know there isn't going to be a funding cliff. So once again, I want to say thank you for your time. We appreciate this bill.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Just before we move on to Ms. Webster, I wanted to draw members' attention. In our packets, we have new runs for the local homeless prevention aid for all of the counties. And so if you go through it, the second column is sort of the current aid, and then the third column shows what each county's allocation would be under the changes in the tax bill and the addition of the new resources, just in case anybody wants to check that out. Did I get that all right, Mr. Swanson? Okay, thank you. Sorry, Ms. Webster, please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jess Webster. I'm a staff attorney with Legal Aid. I use she, her pronouns. Legal Aid represents Minnesotans living with low incomes and low wealth statewide. First, I just want to thank the committee and Chair Gomez for crafting a bill that centers tax fairness and equity and really centers families and kids, as the commissioner said. Specifically, Article 1, we appreciate the scaffolding around the child tax credit, and that will allow for periodic and advance payments and will provide some protections for Minnesotans who volunteer to participate. We're also really excited that 18-year-olds will be able to participate in the larger child tax credit. As I testified last month, these are meaningful dollars to families. It's rent, it's transportation, it's catching up a few debts, and it's and as we're in this weird moment with soaring food prices, it'll be helpful on that front as well. And then we're also appreciative in Article 9 of the inclusion of taxpayer outreach and assistance grants. Legal Aid doesn't provide free tax prep, but we do realize or recognize how critical those services are to the people that we represent. We're often not seeing the other side of it, where folks have had inexperienced professionals, where there's harmless error, where there's predatory practices, and then we're representing folks with the IRS later. So we appreciate bolstering that system, and we appreciate the bill. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Webster. Up next is Nan Madden, and on deck is Beth Cadoon.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Nan Madden. I'm director of the Minnesota Budget Project. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of several portions of this bill that are aimed at priorities, including investing in Minnesota families and their ability to get kids off to a strong start, successfully implementing the 2023 tax bill, and improving the tax filing system. Thank you for the provisions in this bill related to advance payments of the child tax credit, which will mean families have more resources to afford the basic expenses of raising thriving children. Advance payments gets money to families sooner and on a timeline that better matches up with how families budget. Advance payments is an innovative approach to tax credit delivery that will make a real difference for everyday Minnesotans in every part of the state. We appreciate the important commitment that Governor Walz and the Department of Revenue have made to making advance payments a reality, and thank you, Madam Chair, for building on that work. We also support expanding the CTC to include children age 18. We also strongly support the direct file provisions in this bill. We know that paying taxes is the way we come together to fund public services that Minnesotans value and count on. Minnesotans could save time and money with this new option for filing their income taxes. It could also increase the number of Minnesotans who receive the tax credits they qualify for and improve the effectiveness of outreach efforts. And finally, thank you for the tax credit outreach and taxpayer assistance grants. Community-based nonprofits are trusted voices who can reach those Minnesotans who don't have a history of regularly filing income taxes or who face financial and language barriers to filing. The work that these organizations do are an essential piece of realizing the full promise of the child tax credit and the other policy choices this committee has made to improve the lives of everyday Minnesotans. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Ms. Madden. Beth Cadoon, on deck is Lars Negstedt.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Beth Cadoon. I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, and we advocate for public policies to strengthen our business climate and to help grow Minnesota's economy. I want to highlight three items in Article 1 that we are opposed to. In Section 4, we oppose the public release of some corporate tax returns by the commissioner, as this violates a longstanding principle of taxpayer privacy. This will make Minnesota an extreme outlier, as no other state nor at the federal level is taxpayer return information released. This adds yet another negative hit to our business climate that is already challenged due to our high cost of doing business in Minnesota, with the highest in the nation's corporate rate, sixth highest income tax rate, permitting challenge, and the many recently added employer mandates. It is unclear what information could be released without Minnesota violating the federal law that prohibits states from releasing federal tax information, as Minnesota taxes are based on federal returns. The sharing of information is an important tax compliance tool for the state. In order to not run afoul of the federal law, these returns would need to be heavily redacted, and as a result, this would not provide any increased public understanding of Minnesota's corporate tax system. A better approach is for policymakers to ask for aggregate data, and that is already allowed under current law, and this would also then not have the negative impacts to our business climate or violate taxpayer privacy. In Section 14, we're opposed to the removal of the longstanding and important safe harbor provided both federally and followed at the state level for businesses that acted reasonably and in good faith regarding their classification of workers. We share the goal of preventing misclassification. However, our members do not want added complexity with the different treatment of the same worker between the federal and the state, especially in an area of the law where clear and consistent guidance from regulators is often lacking. The last item I will flag is the study on the base erosion in Section 16. There is a letter from the Council of State Taxation. I would ask you to take a look at it. It does explain the international tax activities have been taking place as well.
Thank you, Ms. Cadoon.
Thank you.
All right. Up next, Lars Negstedt. On deck is Roz Peterson. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members, and thank you for the opportunity to testify. Excuse me. My name is Lars Negstedt. I'm the policy director for ISAIAH. ISAIAH is a multiracial statewide nonpartisan coalition of faith communities, black barbershops, child care centers, and other community-based constituencies working toward racial, economic, and climate justice in Minnesota. I'm here to thank you for the inclusion of several provisions, actually five that I'll tick through very quickly. First, the advanced child tax credit payments, as we've heard many times already, will strengthen an important anti-poverty policy by ensuring families have access to the money they need on a timely basis. Secondly, like is done in much of the world, allowing people to file directly will reduce the hassle and cost of tax filing for millions of Minnesota households and ensure that families receive the benefits that they are owed. Third, international tax avoidance by large multinational corporations puts our local small businesses at a disadvantage. Last year, we came close to a holistic solution, worldwide combined reporting, but the corporate base erosion study this year would provide important information for policymakers and the public to make informed decisions in future years. Fourth, we applaud the inclusion of aid for homelessness assistance to counties and tribal governments based on the population of homeless children. And last but not least, we support the corporate tax disclosure in Article 1, Section 4. On this point, we'd like to bring to your attention the recent front page Star Tribune article that highlights the recent trend of major corporations closing their foundations with a brief quote from that article. Without a tax-exempt foundation, corporations no longer need to file annual tax returns with the IRS that detail who is on their board, how much money they distribute, and where their money goes. We think that's a step in the wrong direction. We believe the corporate tax transparency language would be a positive step towards improving public accountability and trust in our tax system. Thank you for the inclusion of those provisions and for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Negstedt. Up next is Roz Peterson, and on deck is Ben Balio.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the Tax Committee. My name is Roz Peterson, and I'm the Public Policy Director for NAAP. NAAP is a development firm of trade associations, and we are the leading real estate developers and owners. Thank you again for allowing me to raise a few concerns with the omnibus bill as it relates to our industry. The omnibus bill contains two provisions relating to corporate erosion. We feel tax returns should not be subject to public provisions related to corporate erosion. We feel returns should not be subject to public disclosure and deserve confidentiality. This would put Minnesota businesses at a disadvantage. Regarding the corporate erosion study, Minnesota is already a leader in the taxation on businesses' taxes and would be the only state in the nation to pass worldwide reporting. Worldwide combined reporting has been considered a few times over the past years and is appropriately not enacted. We understand the issues with blighted properties, but allowing cities the ability to raise taxes on undeveloped properties through land value districts is not the direction we should go. Also, there are times when property owners have delays for multiple reasons in developing their properties and would be punished by these districts. Developers relate better to credits and carrots, and that helps spur development. Finally, decoupling from the safe harbor protections in the IRS code raises concerns for our members. While we support preventing misclassification of workers, this would cause confusion and more challenges for businesses at the federal and state level. This has been a long-standing protection for businesses. Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, Ben Balio. On deck, Gavin Hansen.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Ben Balio, and I'm here testifying on behalf of the Minnesota Nurses Association. Thanks for the chance to speak. So MNA is happy to share our support for several provisions included in this year's House Omnibus Tax Bill. First, I'd like to call out Article 1, Section 4, which would make the state tax returns of large corporations public. America has the highest healthcare costs in the world, and yet we lack the sort of basic healthcare that is commonplace in all other developed countries. MNA is very concerned about the amount of profits that are being extracted by insurers, pharmaceutical companies, medical device manufacturers, and for-profit HMOs. We believe greater transparency would help inform policymakers and the general public about how much we are paying into these profit-seeking firms and whether or not the amount they pay in taxes, or maybe aren't paying in taxes, makes sense based on the profits they make in our state. Second, Article 1, Section 10 provides an advance payment system for recipients in Minnesota's nation-leading child tax credit. As nurses, our members see firsthand the impact of a society that too often leaves hardworking people without the means to make ends meet. We know that poverty drives an enormous share of emergency visits and the overall healthcare crisis in our state, so MNA supports efforts to reduce poverty, especially among children in their formative years. And this tax credit would remove barriers for students and career seekers that might otherwise not be able to obtain further education, including future nurses. Similarly, we also support the expansion of funding for successful local homeless aid programs. The burden of serving the unhoused population falls heavily on county and tribal governments, and this policy smartly sends the aid where it is needed most. We are glad the Tax Committee is looking at addressing these challenges upstream, because it is all too often that our members see the consequences of policy inaction playing out in the hospitals and emergency rooms. With that, I'd just like to thank you all for your work this session, Chair Gomez, for your leadership and for your time today.
Thank you, Mr. Balio. Up next, Gavin Hansen. On deck is Eric Bernstein.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Gavin Hansen, and I'm here today on behalf of the Minnesota Business Partnership. I appreciate the opportunity to address House File 5247, specifically three sections we oppose: Article 1, Section 4, of the corporate disclosure; Article 1, Section 14, safe harbors; and Article 1, Section 16, tax base erosion study. At the heart of our mission is ensuring that Minnesota remains competitive in the global business economy. The corporate disclosure section presents substantial hurdle to this objective. The bill's implementation would complicate the process of disclosing state tax information without simultaneously revealing federal tax information. Given that Minnesota state returns are intertwined with federal returns on the corporate income calculation form M4I, this creates significant logistical challenges for the Department of Revenue as well as serious legal conflicts. We also are concerned about the underlying consequences of this proposal. It would require disclosing highly sensitive information that out-of-state competitors could exploit for a competitive advantage. Additionally, it could enable anti-business groups, political opponents, and others to selectively use portions of a 500-page corporate tax return out of context to fuel false or misleading narratives. The private information targeted by this proposal is already accessible to the Department of Revenue and IRS auditors, so we see no practical reason to make it available online for public access. Let me turn now to Article 1, Section 16, which addresses the tax base erosion study. Just 2 months ago, MMB's February forecast revealed record corporate tax revenues being deposited into the state general fund. This comes just a year after one of the most stringent versions of GILTI in the country were enacted. The study's inclusion gives the false impression that Minnesota companies are evading state corporate franchise income tax by storing funds in offshore tax havens, which is simply not the case. We don't think allocating $655,000 for this study is a prudent use of limited resources. In conclusion, we had hoped this bill would include tax policies that signal to Minnesota businesses that this is a premier location to establish headquarters and conduct business. Such measures would help businesses stay competitive in a constantly evolving global economy. Regrettably, the current bill does not align with those aspirations. Thank you for attention to this critical issue, and thank you all for your work.
Thank you. Up next, Eric Bernstein. On deck is Christine Snyder.
Chair Gomez and members of the committee, my name is Eric Bernstein, and I run the We Make Minnesota Coalition. We work on taxes and budget issues in the state. Thank you for having me here today to share our support for several provisions, included in HF 5247, an omnibus tax bill that we think will make the state's tax code much more equitable and stronger for many portions of Minnesotans. In particular, I want to call attention to a few sections. Article 1, Section 4 requires the public disclosure of corporate tax returns of high-earning corporations. We believe this will provide valuable transparency and add a lot of information that policymakers can help. I think, honestly, the best critique I've heard of this policy is that it won't solve everything, that the information we get will be complicated and hard to go through. I think that's a fair point, as we've heard today, but I don't think that satisfies a counter to the public's interest in having this information made public. Article 1, Section 6 is a free filing provision. We think this will make filing easier and cheaper for Minnesotans that spend millions of dollars every year and many, many hours filing their taxes. Article 1, Section 16 is a DOR study of corporate tax base erosion. We support this provision, and we think that more information would be helpful for an issue of international consensus. However, we also share some surprising concern about the cost and the timeline. I talked with some folks who said they could maybe do it for half, so perhaps that's a conversation we could have later. Sorry, just a stupid joke. We thought that perhaps in conference committee, the timeline in particular is of some concern. It seems like not a lot of time for DOR to turn that around if it is going to be a quality product. And lastly, various provisions in Section 2 that extend and expand funding for the local homeless aid, as previous testifiers said, we think that that's a cost saver in the long run for the state. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bernstein. Christy Snyder, welcome back. And on deck is Natalitha Sumokoli. Apologies if I've mispronounced your name.
Please great proceed. To be back. Thank you, Madam Chair and Chair Committee. So grateful for your work. My name is Christy Snyder. I use she, her pronouns. I'm the Policy and System Transformation Officer at Youth Prize. We're a state intermediary devoted to elevating youth voice and increasing equity for young people in Minnesota. And you guys are doing that with the tax bill. So thank you so much. I love so much about this, but I'm going to focus on including children up to their 19th birthday in the child tax credit, coupled with the advanced payment of the credit. It's high school graduation season, and there's a lot of people that are graduating that are 18, 19, 20, 21, because we have K-12 funding up to age 21. So by you increasing this up to the 19th birthday, you're getting closer to how we fund K-12 schools. We also know it takes a lot of money to launch. We know that middle income and upper income families regularly give over $500 billion a year in financial assistance to their own children. That's from a Merrill Lynch study in 2020. Yet research shows that large racial and ethnic disparities in parental financial transfers due to structural inequities in the form of economic resources. You all are starting to give some of that funding to young parents or to those families so that they can keep their kids healthy and able to launch with a high school diploma. I think that this tax bill is moving towards those more equitable practices. Expanding the child tax credit to age 18 will not transform everything that we need to do to make sure that we are able to have young people launch successfully into the workforce, but it's the next right step. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Snyder. Natalitha Sumo Kali, welcome back to the committee.
Good afternoon, Chair Gomez and members of the committee. My name is Natalitha Sumo Kali. I'm the Economic Justice Outreach Manager at the Children's Defense Fund Minnesota. In my role, I work with community partners statewide to connect families to tax credits and other work supports through our Bridge to Benefits and Economic Stability Indicator tools so that they can achieve economic stability for themselves and their children. We're here today to express support for the implementation of advance payments of the child tax credits as well as the tax outreach grants. With the support of the tax outreach grant funded last session, we were able to add the child tax credit to our Bridge to Benefits and Economic Stability Indicator tools to help families better understand their eligibility for CTC, get access to free tax preparation sites around the state, and to help them make sound financial budgeting decisions for their families. Since February 2024, through our tools, we've been able to serve 2,020 family members across the state of Minnesota. Using our tools and network, as well as facilitating several focus groups, surveys, and listening sessions with families around the state, we have heard overwhelmingly the importance of families having the option of advance payments of their child tax credit and how that can help them with their ability to budget and to support the healthy development of their families. A recent survey that we conducted, families that responded said about 74% of the families that responded said that they will opt into advanced periodic payments of the CTC if that option was available to them. In order to make this option a reality for families, we recognize and support the administrative funding necessary for a successful implementation. While families are excited about receiving advance payments of their child tax credit, we also got overwhelming concerns about the needing to pay back if there are small changes within their income. So we're glad to see the permanent protections for families using this option in the bill. I want to thank you all for your hard work, and thank you for the time to be able to testify.
Thank you, Ms. Sumo Kali. Thanks for being here. Up next, we have Mayor Pete Hajduk. And on deck is Richard Campsula. Welcome to the committee, Mayor Hajduk. Please just introduce yourself as you get started.
Yes, good afternoon. I'm Mayor Pete Hajduk from Hibbing. I want to thank you, Chair Gomez, Representative Lizelgard, and commission members for allowing me to speak tonight and testify on provisions in the minerals article. I'm down here because I have a passion for my city, a passion for the Iron Range region, and of course, the great state of Minnesota. What I need to explain to you, in the city of Hibbing, we have two taconite plants that sit on the footprint of the city of Hibbing. We produce 31% of the tonnage on the Iron Range annually. We also translate that to $37 million towards production tax for our region, which is spread to improve our region moving forward. This week, I had an opportunity to have great conversation with Representative Lizelgard and Bill, who's the bill author, and Senator Hochschild. It gave me an opportunity to express my concerns, open communications, and a better understanding of the proposed bill. At this time, I look forward to continuing these conversations as the bill moves forward. I had an opportunity this week also to talk with two of our mayors from Nashwauk and from Virginia, and we have found common ground in what we want for our communities in this core mining area to survive and thrive. But this happens when you have communication, you work together for the needs of our region for now and moving forward into the future. We have a motto up on the Iron Range, the Rams area, one range, one voice. And that's what has kept us strong all these years. In closing, thank you, Chair Gomez, for the opportunity to testify. Representative Lizelgard, the city having expressed a strong support for what you're doing for the mining communities of the Iron Range with this bill. We stand ready to work with you and all the range legislators to move forward for the state of Minnesota, the region, and of course the city of Hibbing. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Hyduk. Up next, Richard Campsula. On deck is Sierra Napoli Thien.
Madam Chair and Representatives and Chair Listegard of the Property Tax Committee, good afternoon. I'm Richard Campsula. I'm the president of AFSCME Local 94, Hibbing Public Utilities, and also the second engineer on the water side of the power plant and processes that use thousands of gallons an hour to produce clean energy to the town of Hibbing, and also supply steam to houses and businesses for heating with well over 100 miles of aging water and steam pipelines dating back World War II-ish. With a aging storage tank that holds a million gallons of water is one catastrophic failure away from having no water for the city of Hibbing. It is important that we continue to move forward to produce clean energy for our grid and also improve the processes, and improving infrastructure of the city of Hibbing will improve the life and reduce unseen issues for the city of Hibbing with the impact to the ratepayers of Hibbing. With a lot of people on fixed incomes and increasing a monthly bill would be terrible for the city. We've spent hundreds of thousands of dollars treating our water so it's drinkable and also usable in our processes that produce energy and steam to local people. This bill is a tremendous way of moving forward and helping us reduce costs and improving a process for making a better Hibbing. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Campsula. Up next is Sierra Napoli Thien, and on deck is Matt Hilgart.
Thank you, Chair Gomez, and especially thank you to, especially thank you to Chair Gomez and our Property Tax Committee Chair, Representative Liz Lagarde, as well as our distinguished guests and representatives. My name, again, is Sierra Napoli Tyne. I use she, her pronouns, and I'm a resident of Southview Apartments in Hibbing, Minnesota. Today, I'm here to testify to support the 2024 House Tax Bill 5247. For 5+ days last summer, between late June and July, my spouse Peter and I, along with around 300 other residents in 145 homes in Southview Apartments, endured the total loss of water. Total loss of water. It was a truly harrowing critical infrastructure failure. The Southview community is a historically underinvested community. Folks often remark that we're forgotten up on the hill. 13 different apartment buildings up there. And around half of the population is medically vulnerable. We have a lot of disabled folks living up there, a lot of kiddos, a lot of older adults, self-included. Not the older adults part, oh, I'm getting there. Last summer, about a month and a half prior to total loss of water, I was diagnosed with epilepsy. I also, undiagnosed at that time, later on in the summer, had a stomach parasite. Fun to deal with during no water. Do you know how much water it takes to flush a toilet? More than the 1 gallon that we were provided. So that water access is a social determinant of health that compounds environmental and economic disadvantages for our community. It weakens immunity and exacerbates those health conditions. Access to clean and affordable water is a human right. And last summer, that right was trampled. Residents went, again, without water for drinking, cooking, and cleaning for a week. We were resilient, banding together to help each other, push our city, our utility provider, and our housing provider to serve our needs. But again, what would you do if you had no extra funding, no friends and family nearby? Where would you go? What would you do if there was no water? Water is health equity. Water is dignity. Water is life. Please join me in supporting and voting for the 2024 House Tax Bill. And thank you again, Chair Gomez, for allowing me to testify.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Matt Hilgard is coming up. On deck is Patricia Naumann. Welcome back.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Nice to be here. My name is Matt Hilgard. I work for the Association of Minnesota Counties. AMC represents all of Minnesota's 87 counties. And I think you'll hear a recurring theme from counties and others today, and that is our gratitude for what this committee has done, and you, Madam Chair, with the homelessness prevention aid that you've put, put together and also increased. I'm starting with this issue because it is just that important. No more than a month ago, members in this committee spent almost a full committee hearing dedicated to hearing from four counties, St. Louis County, Hennepin, Mauer, and Anoka, about what these dollars mean. We heard moving stories from Duluth, where a mother lost custody of her children due to substance use disorder. The county connected her with nonprofits supported by these dollars and moved into Annie's house. There, she received county services and then transitioned into an apartment, also using these dollars, where she is now back reunited with her children and also going to be an AmeriCorps volunteer at Annie's place in the future. In Mauer County, we heard about law enforcement finding a family staying in an RV in a parking lot where that RV was leaking fluids and in terrible condition. There was also children found in the RV. The county used the funds to get the family into temporary housing immediately and then worked to find permanently housing where they still are to this date using these funds. We can use numbers and stats about how many families we serve, the savings, about heading off other social services spending were not for housing stability, and we'll do that. You have strong reporting requirements, but I don't want that to be lost in the fact of these stories. So this is what this aid program is for. It's to allow local governments to respond to the emergency needs of children and family that do not have permanent roofs over their heads. And so needless to say, we're passionate about this program, and we're passionate about making it work well. The second issue I want to talk about is a little bit more of a nuanced property tax policy, and that's Article 2, Section 1 regarding the Alliance property tax case. Counties have three concerns about the outcomes of this case. We first have concern that due to the complex interplay with existing statutes, now the developers or property owners will benefit from a property tax exemption, but the tenants will also might be faced with an actual property tax statement and no access to renter's credit. The second is that this new exemption will have significant tax base shifts. We just finished 3 or 4 years, Chair Howard, of conversations around 4D. This is going to amplify this in a significant, significant way. We don't even know how big the 4D tax shift is going to be, but this will amplify it. We have some counties estimating that 10 to 35% of the current 4D stock might now get this exemption. And the third
just went off, Mr. Hilgard.
Thank you.
Good wrap up. Thanks.
And the third is just that this has a negative impact on TIF sustainability districts. So lastly, Chair Gomez, thank you very much for your work on this bill, and we stand ready to partner with you in the future.
Thank you, Mr. Hilgard. Sorry to interrupt. Patricia Nauman, you're up. Cap O'Rourke is on deck. Please proceed.
Madam Chair and members, thank you for the opportunity to comment today. My name is Patricia Nauman. I'm the Executive Director of Metro Cities, representing cities across the seven-county metropolitan region at the state capitol. I appreciate the opportunity today to comment specifically on provisions of Article 6, which addresses processes for cities to impose local option sales taxes. And I'd also like to thank Chair Gomez for her work with local government organizations and others to discuss these provisions as this bill advances. Metro City's policies generally do support a balanced and diversified revenue system that acknowledges varying city needs, characteristics, and capacities, including the ability of cities to impose local sales taxes for certain capital and public improvements without the need for special legislation. Metro Cities did closely monitor the work of the Local Taxes Advisory Task Force last fall and appreciates the work of that task force in wrestling with the very complex questions of criteria and eligibility for local taxes. The changes proposed in Article 6 do reflect some of that work, including allowing local governments to impose local taxes without special legislation for certain types of projects meeting certain criteria. While Metro Cities does appreciate this general direction, we are also concerned that the list of projects is more restrictive than what was recommended by the task force, specifically that it does preclude community centers from eligibility, as well as restricts the types of parks that would be eligible. I just want to add, Madam Chair and members, that with respect to community centers, many do serve not just the community in which they are built, but do provide important services and functions to surrounding communities that would otherwise not have access to such services and functions, thus serving regional needs that are similar to, I believe, to other allowed uses that are included in Article 6. Metro Cities further and finally does support adequate local government aid through the existing LGA program as a means of providing equalization, which, and that is a longstanding primary purpose of that program, and we certainly would stand ready to work with the committee if this advances in terms of how that might work toward the equalization. Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, Ms. Nauman. welcome, Cap O'Rourke. On deck is Matt Mossman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Cap O'Rourke, Executive Director of Minnesota Association of Small Cities. We advocate on behalf of the over 700 cities with populations under 5,000. I am here today to talk about the local option sales tax plan and Article 6. Minnesota Small Cities has a number of concerns, one of which our cities want a clear path for how they can implement a local option sales tax. Up till now, it has been somewhat of a hurdle, and they would obviously had to come down here and get approval, legislative approval, and we would like a clear path on how cities can move forward. Having said that, we also acknowledge that with greater ease in creating a local option sales tax really sets a precedent that could put many of Minnesota's smallest cities further behind, not having the same revenue streams that our larger counterparts have. And with that, the other piece is when we talk about equalization, we like the concept that Chair Gomez has in creating an equalization pot that will spread some of those revenues around. We do have concerns on how it would be implemented based on pure population, but we are willing to work with that. We do have concerns about this money going to counties and then expecting to trickle down to cities, which in our history has not always happened. And lastly, I would just say we have concerns about the unintended consequences that happens with any legislation. But one thing that we foresee happening is potentially cities seeing a list of approved amenities where they could offer a local option sales tax, simply looking at what they have and realizing, oh, well, we don't have one of these, so we can implement the local option sales tax, and seeing an explosion of local option sales tax across the state. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. O'Rourke. Up next, Matt Mossman. Joel Carlson, you're on deck.
Madam Chair and members, Matt Mossman with the Minnesota Inter-County Association. Thank you for an opportunity to testify in support of several provisions today in House File 5247. I want to just start by thanking and appreciating the provision in Article 2, Section 1 as well. We believe that this provision is really important to clarifying the state policy for taxation of residential properties that are owned and leased by institutions of public charity in the wake of the Alliance decision, and really importantly, I think, maintaining Class 4D as the reduced class rate option available for low-income housing. I would note just on the property tax base issues, we've shared some technical ideas and feedback to Representative Elkins on his land value taxation. We look forward to continuing that conversation as the bill moves forward and there's discussions on that. I really want to emphasize, as did my colleague, the support for the $5 million of additional money for local housing aid and the permanent extension of that program. As we have reflected, many counties have used that to tremendous positive outcomes, emergency assistance and temporary hotel housing to keep families together and kids in school, embedding social workers and case managers in school, and other examples as they continue to implement that. I want to appreciate Chair Gomez, the work that you have and the outreach that you have had with counties and cities on the local sales tax legislation. We know that county projects are not as glamorous as sometimes the community amenities, just in the nature of the work that counties do, but we greatly appreciate the inclusion of the correctional facilities, district courts, and law enforcement centers in the bill, and believe that that, along with libraries, parks, and trails, provides a genuine opportunity for counties to fund a really costly local regional projects. And then finally, I do want to emphasize the support for the solid waste management tax one time in the bill, and really want to appreciate Chair Hornstein's work on that legislation over all these years on behalf of counties and SCORE. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mossman. Joel Carlson, and on deck is Nathan Jessen.
All right.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. I'm Joel Carlson. I have a government affairs business here in St. Paul, and I have two issues I want to talk about. I signed up twice, but I don't need 4 minutes. First,
you want
Article
giving 4 minutes. So no worries there.
Okay, now take that off of my time. Now. So, on behalf of the community of Minnesota Resorts, Madam Chair, members, I want to thank Chair Lisligard and Chair Davids for including Article 2, Section 5 to adjust the resort property tax tiers. That is a very important provision for us. We've been trying to do it. They haven't been touched since 2008. We greatly appreciate it. The second thing I need to talk about is our House Tax Committee Groundhog's Day. I have testified here since 2011 about Article 7, Sections 1 and 2, about the tax on travel agents. Here's what we know. Travel agents were subject to sales tax since 2011. Travel agents pay that tax. Travel agents do not furnish or supply lodging, and all of the lodging tax for the room charged by the hotelier or the lodging establishment is paid by the local lodging establishment. But this seeks to impose a local lodging tax on our services, which has never been done. And the local lodging or the sales tax report at page 18 doesn't recommend any changes to local lodging taxes. And even our friend Pat Dalton recommends that even if you're going to do this for the hotelier, if they have a small amount, you should have a de minimis amount for lodging taxes. I want to just talk about that de minimis and what that means. I went online to one of the groups promoting this at the Pipestone to see if I could get a hotel room in Pipestone. I couldn't get one. But I could get one in Laverne, the Super 8 in Laverne. I can get one for $50. I don't know what eight things are super at the Super 8, but if I rent that out as an agent, if I rent that out at $10,000 worth of lodging rentals, my service fee on that is $1,000. Do it equally across every month. My local lodging tax is $2.50.
That was your time, Mr. Carlson, if you could wrap up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. $2.50. There's no way to comply with this. It just doesn't work, and I'd appreciate it as you consider this that it not stay in the bill. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Up next, Nathan Jessen and Commissioner Marion Green, you are on deck.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Nathan Jessen. I represent the League of Minnesota Cities. Thanks for the opportunity to testify on the bill. I've included a letter with additional background on a few other sections, but I'm just going to focus on things that are from the division report that the committee didn't hear full bills on. The main one, the local lodging tax provisions, Article 7, Sections 1 and 2. This would address a disparity between what local lodging tax revenue is subject to taxation, depending on how the tax is administered. So under current law, if you book a room in a city with a local lodging tax by calling a hotel or going directly to their website, and you spend $100 on that room, you pay local lodging tax on that $100. But if you book a room at that same hotel in the same location using an online travel company website or an accommodation intermediary, you only pay local lodging tax on the portion that the hotel retains. So if the online travel company keeps $10, that $10 is not subject to local lodging tax for the locally administered lodging taxes, but it is subject to lodging tax for the state-administered lodging taxes. So that's St. Paul, Minneapolis, Rochester, and a handful of others. There's over 100 cities, mostly in greater Minnesota, with local lodging taxes that are locally administered. So, I mean, questions came up about whether or not this can be administered. On that point, I just think it should be pointed out that these companies are currently paying sales tax, including local sales tax. And according to statute 270C.171, they are required to pay lodging tax for state administered, and they're doing so in those communities. I can't speak to every single taxpayer, but generally that is the law, and that's DOR's guidance. And the last thing, I just want to thank Representative Davids for his comments yesterday about there only being one LGA penalty forgiveness provision this year. We work hard with the OSA every year to try to get that number down. In July, there are 40 cities out of compliance. You only have one here today, so we think that's a relative success. Thank you.
Excellent work, everyone. Thank you, Mr. Jessen. Commissioner Marion Green, welcome.
Thank you so much. Chair Gomez and members of the committee, thank you so much for the opportunity to be here with you today to testify. I'm Marion Green. I'm on the Hennepin County Board, and I represent District 3. I'm here to thank you for the boost in local homelessness prevention aid and your long-term commitment to that program. Hennepin County firmly believes that each of our 1.3 million residents deserves a safe and dignified place to call home. We're currently seeing an unprecedented increase in families seeking shelter, where the need far exceeds our shelter capacity, which is high capacity. Beneath the statistics, there are glimmers of success in getting core groups connected to our system so that we can work with them to get them stably housed. This one-time boost in aid will help us reach more students and families who are in urgent need. Hennepin County uses this aid to give direct assistance to families that have been identified as at risk of homelessness. We partner with school districts and housing providers to identify families and help them find affordable housing or provide emergency rental assistance so they can stay in their home. Currently, we expect to serve 300 to 400 families annually. What we have seen is that when we are able to provide this assistance, we can avoid evictions, which dramatically increases the number of families in shelters. Equally important is the stability for our students so they can focus on their education. I also want to thank you for the clarifying language for the taxation of institutions of public charity in response to the recent Minnesota Supreme Court case. Hennepin County provides significant funding for housing developers to lock in affordable housing units. In 2024, we anticipate awarding $11 million to nonprofit developers to help create 830 new affordable units. Fixing this language is urgent to ensure this housing remains affordable for tenants. It will prevent property taxes from shifting directly onto the tenants, and it'll ensure that tenants are eligible for the renter's credit. As you all know from your historic work last session, the renter's credit provides significant help to low-income tenants to bring down the cost of housing, and the average credit is around $750 for a family with children. At 30% AMI, it's closer to $1,500, so significant. One last sentence. I want to thank you for the SCORE funding, too. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Commissioner Green. That completes the testimony from people who signed up in advance. Is there anyone else present who wishes to testify on this bill? Come on up. Please just identify yourself for the record as you get started with your testimony.
Hello, my name is Ann Elke. I am the superintendent of the Ely Public School District. Thank you, Chair Gozmez and members of the House Tax Committee. I'm here today to express my appreciation to Representative Liz Lagarde for including funding for the Ely Schools and the Northland Learning Center and Alternative Learning Center in House 2024 House Tax Bill. Specific to Ely, this grant will help us complete our long-planned facilities upgrade on our 100-year-old campus, which is the home of the Washington Elementary School and the Ely Memorial High School. As for the Northland Learning Center and the Alternative Learning Center and facilities, Ely is one of the member school districts of this special education cooperative, and we appreciate the legislature considering this funding for facilities that serve our most challenged and vulnerable students. These funds have done so much to improve educational facilities in the Taconite area, relief area in northeastern Minnesota, benefiting thousands of students on the Iron Range, including Ely. Last year, the legislature took similar steps in the tax bill, allowing the Department of Iron Range Resources Commissioner to bond for individual school projects on the Iron Range. A similar grant was passed that helped us move forward with renovations of our 100-year-old campus in Ely, resulting in a new learning spaces, improved HVAC systems, and an up-to-date vocational training spaces. Most importantly, for our parents and for our kids, our new school space has a modern, safe, and secure entrance, which will protect our students and staff for many years to come. We will now hopefully move forward with completing renovations and upgrades to our track, our football and baseball fields, our gymnasium, and ice arena, which are all important for our youth sports and for also our valuable teaching and learning spaces. Finally, unrelated to the school, as a property owner and a taxpayer in northeastern Minnesota, I appreciate the increase in the Taconite tax relief rebate. Whew. 2 minutes.
Well done. You came in perfectly.
Thank you very much, Chair, and for the committee.
Thank you very much. Commissioner McDonald, were you next, or did you want to go?
I'll yield my...
All right.
Go ahead.
Come on up. Please just identify yourself for the record as you get started with your testimony. Welcome to the committee.
All right. Well, good afternoon, and thank you, Madam Chair, along with Representative Liz Lagarde and members of the committee. I am Lana Frelick. I'm the city administrator for Silver Bay, and we strongly support this bill for two key reasons that will have an immediate impact and significant impact on our community. First, we want to thank you for investing mining dollars back into mining communities, of which we are with Cleveland Cliffs North Shore Mining. This bill will support funding for our road and infrastructure project, which is a citywide project. Silver Bay is a little bit unique in the fact that we were developed at one given time by Reserve Mining Company, and so all of our infrastructure is going at the exact same time. And we don't have a, we're trying to do a phasing plan that will allow us to amend that infrastructure for our future. But we also are a city that, because of the Reserve Mining case, we have historic significance has been declared because of that environmental case. We also do not have the financial ability. We simply are a small town without the financial ability to take on this kind of project. It doesn't matter if a mile of roadway is put in down in the cities or in the metro, it's a mile of roadway. And we just don't have the capacity or the taxpayers to be able to support the large project that it's going to take. So this project is really important for us, and the tax bill to support that is very important. The other part, the second part why we support this is, again, the taconite production tax credit rebate. This too will have a big impact, especially on our elderly community that has fixed incomes. We're seeing property taxes rise, and the relief from that homestead credit is not happening. So this increase will help them tremendously. So I thank you all for your time. I thank you all for supporting this bill. And if you know, you can always contact me if you have questions in the future. Thank you.
Thank you for being with us and for your testimony. Commissioner?
Thank you, Chair Gomez, Chair Liz Lagarde. First of all, let me thank the people that came last night to the Ranger Party. I enjoyed the time spent with Chair Gomez there. And no, I'm not going to sing here. I sang there last night, but I'm not going to sing here tonight. So, again, good afternoon. I'm Paul McDonald, St. Louis County Commissioner. And I'm here to say thank you and to support the bill that's before us today. It brings much needed property tax relief to the Iron Range. And if you look at the legislation, it amounts to, I believe, a 66% increase in the taconite relief area, which will bring the levies down and help especially our senior citizens on the Iron Range as we get with the valuations and the higher cost for everything. It's going to help bring more dollars for our residents. So also, I want to talk a little bit about the minerals article and thank you for the projects that are included in there for St. Louis County, the canyon, solid waste site, Mesabi Trail connection from Aurora to Hoyt Lakes, water projects, and also an environmental hazard in Hoyt Lakes. The Bowes School is included in the bill, which is huge as we look to possibly put a housing project on there. And also thanks to the committee for the homelessness aid for St. Louis County. I really, really appreciate that. On behalf of the Board of Commissioners, thank you for your work. I really appreciate working with each and every one of you and look forward to what comes ahead the rest of the session. Appreciate your work. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Commissioner McDonald. Is there anyone else present that wants to offer any testimony on the bill? All right, last call. Looks like we're good. So thank you so much to all of our testifiers for joining us today. We know a lot of you traveled far and we were all listening, and we really appreciate your feedback on the bill that we've put together. Tomorrow, Friday, 1 p.m., we will be back for markup and discussion of this bill, and so look forward to seeing you then. With that, we are adjourned.